Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio here on 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. I'm Tom Lounges, your host for Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. Tonight, my guest will be calling in Gail Peterson. She is the singer, songwriter, rhythm guitarist, and she is the gal that's keeping this band, the Catholic Girls, going strong all these years. Catholic Girls were one of the first female bands of the new wave pop punk scene, and they were the first ones to get signed out of New Jersey. So we'll be talking to her. We'll be playing some songs from the brand new release, the Catholic Girls Rock and Roll School for Girls. It's got unreleased and released tracks. You'll hear a little of both tonight on Midwest Beat after your headlines. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio here on the dial at 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. It's time for Midwest Beat, a program all about music and the people who make it. I'll be your host for the next hour. My name is Tom Lounges. Tonight, my guest is Gail Peterson. Gail is the songwriter, vocalist, rhythm guitarist of a group called the Catholic Girls, and they roared out of New Jersey. They were the first all-girl band signed out of New Jersey during the new wave pop-punk era. They were signed to MCA Records. Their 1982 debut album included the new wave anthem Boys Can Cry, which landed them on MTV and commercial radio. But we're going to go back to that first album now, which is included on the brand new CD anthology called The Catholic Girls Rock and Roll School for Girls. It's out this Friday on JSP Records. We'll be talking to Gail about this new compilation and about why certain songs were chosen and certain ones weren't. We'll also feature some different songs from their released catalog and also play a few demo versions that are part of this new anthology. But first, let's go back to that first album and a song that's on this brand new compilation. This is the opening track that introduced a young teenage Tom Lounges to the Catholic Girls. Someone New. Really left. Looking for someone new. If you have not yet discovered the Catholic Girls, I gotta say, where you been? They've been around for years and years and years, always putting great music out. And that's going back to the first song that introduced me to the band, 1982's Catholic Girls album, opening track. And I was wrong in my introduction by saying that I was a teenage Tom Lounges. By that point, I was right around 22. No, 21. 21 in 82. But anyway, joining us is the young lady, the Catholic Girl, who gave us that song, Gail Peterson. Hey, Gail.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good to hear your voice. You and I have been emailing and Facebooking and everything for several days now.
Everything you can think of.
I got to tell you, I've been on a Catholic Girls binge lately. I broke out the vinyl, of course, on the first album. I was playing my Catholic Girls Exposed album, the Meet the Catholic Girls. I've just been enjoying the heck out of it. And then a couple days ago, the Rock and Roll School for Girls new release came out, and I got to do it all over again. There are selected songs that aren't on there. Park Theater, for instance, one of my favorites from the first album, didn't make the cut. So I was just wondering, how involved were you in the release of this double CD, Rock and Roll School for Girls, which comes out officially on Friday?
Well, let me tell you about this first. I was very interested in the song you picked as your favorite, Someone New, because that was the single the band wanted.
Really?
That was what we wanted as our first single. And we, of course, it was MCA's decision, not that we didn't like Boys Can Cry, but Someone New, we felt, really went to the heart and soul of the band, because it had the pounding drums, it had guitar parts, and it had vocals and a general vibe that we thought represented the band very well. We were very involved at that. We've always been involved at creating, me writing the songs and the band creating its own parts and all of that. So we had meticulously done it, and we wanted that song. And when we were on tour, people kept saying, why was that not the single? Why was that not the single? And just like you, a lot of DJs said, that's the one we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
That's
so you're right on target there.
All right. See, that was before I was a DJ. So there you go.
Ah.
I had good musical taste then. But that's actually the song I think I heard on the radio, because that was what introduced me to you guys. I want to say it was WXRT in Chicago, but I can't remember. They were part of that big beat, new wave sound back then. And I'm just happy that I got turned on to you guys. Now, you've been together a very, very long time. There was a few years of hiatus here and there, but for the most part, you've been together. So what has kept the group together, even though the sound came in and out of vogue?
Well, I think, you know, the band came together. Roxy and I were very young at the time, and we didn't even know each other that well in school, but Roxy had put up a little sign looking for a band to put together, and I was thinking the same thing. I had had some problems trying to form a band, and so did she. And we had both happened to hear The Runaways and said, you know what, why not do an all-girl band?
Why
can't we do that? So we got together, and we eventually got two other players, and that's how that began. And we had that musical chemistry, and that's the thing that held us together all these years.
Now, Roxy is still there with you. Other members have changed and come and gone. Now, who else? Who is in the band today?
Currently, today, it is Roxy, me, Doreen, and then we have one guy that we allowed in.
Oh, no.
Yes. We gave him our blessing, and he's allowed to be in there.
I can't wait to see him in a little schoolgirl outfit.
Yeah, I think he won't go that far. That's it. So.
But the image you guys had was great. The album cover really jumped off the retail shelves and the record bins. And I got to say, the schoolgirl outfit was way ahead of Britney Spears. I mean, way ahead of the curve. Who came up with that idea? Or were you, in fact, actual Catholic school girls?
Oh, we were actual Catholic school girls. And we were basically wearing exactly what we would have worn any other day. We thought, well, maybe we should do the spandex thing. And then we said, you know what? We're just going to go back to who we really are. And that's who we were, Catholic girls.
Wow.
So we had our own uniforms designed. We couldn't use our own school uniforms, of course. And we had those done, and I had a little dressmaker make it for us. And it worked for us. That was who we were.
Wow. So have you, over the years, looked back and said, I can't believe this has really happened? I mean, we had this idea in high school to put our guitars on and see what we could do, and now all these decades later, we're still doing radio, we're still releasing music, we're still putting, you know, hopefully getting back on the road and putting tours on. Could you have imagined it back then that it would still be going on?
I don't think I thought that far ahead, but if I did, I would have said, yeah, I hope that happens.
Who was it that, obviously you mentioned the Runaways. I've had Sherry Curry on the show a few times, and I've worked with mm-hmm. Joan over the years. Who was it that really inspired you as a guitar player, as a songwriter? Was it the Runaways, or did it go further and further back? I mean, I know that Genya Raven has had some input in helping promote you guys on her radio program. Of course, you go any back even further, it was Fanny and the Ronettes, and along with Genya and Goldie and the Gingerbreads. Who was it that you looked to the first time and said, that's a girl, I could do that?
You know, we didn't think along those lines so much. We were thinking, like, my parents had played the Beatles a lot, mm-hmm. and I was really into that. My father was into gospel. He was into Broadway. So I was into all kinds of music. I never really thought there were limitations, at least in my mind, that girls couldn't do it. And Roxy didn't feel that way either. So it wasn't like we fixated on any girl or girl group. We just said, we can do the same thing.
Okay.
So when the whole punk scene started, and there was Elvis Costello and Patti Smith and all that kind of thing, we kind of snuck into some of those shows, and that really motivated us.
All right. We had artists like Lena Lovitch and Rachel Sweet. I worked with them during the Stiff America years, and it seemed like women were starting to come to the forefront. And it wasn't even women that had to be ladylike or feminine per se. Like you said, Patti Smith. Mm-hmm. Debbie Harry, of course, was the icon of all icons back then. But right. It was like women were finally being treated as equals in rock and roll during that particular period.
It definitely was. And it was more like, why not? Why can't you do this? So that's why we had people that we admired. It didn't matter if they were male or female. It was either way.
Mm-hmm. You were often touted as being like MCA's answer to the Go-Go's or the Bangles. Did you see that as a rivalry thing, or again, was it gender nonspecific because you were out there just doing your thing?
You know what? The Go-Go's were kind of simultaneous with us, and to tell you the truth, we never really thought, I mean, the Go-Go's, there's no problem with them. They're their own thing. They were on the West Coast. We were on the East Coast. And their songs were fine, but I never thought they had that sort of brilliant, insightful, or heart-rending, passionate spark. And they wrote that snappy, kind of upbeat tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And we really concentrated on, I know for myself, on the lyrics, meaning, and the drive of it. And we had, I think, more depth lyrically and more deeper, more intense music. And I got to tell you, we going from what the Go-Go said, we didn't hate our parents, and we didn't have a drug problem.
There you go. Well, the first song we opened with, Someone New, definitely had a poppiness to it, though. It was catchy.
Yeah, we were definitely a pop, what was called then new wave, but with rock touches in it too.
All right, let's play another song, and we're going to go to the demo side, and then we're going to talk about the new release and the fact that both CDs are completely different in so many ways. This one is Broken Record. Is there a story behind it?
Broken Record. Let's see. It's one of those songs that, you know, with either it could be a male or female, but, you know, you're going out with somebody, and you think, yeah, this is the wrong guy. I just know it, but it slowly creeps up on you. It takes a kind of a while. You go to a theater, you go to a movie, and you say, maybe, maybe, maybe. And then it's a broken record, and you know you got to get out of the relationship.
All right. This is it, going back to the original demo version, and this is contained on the Catholic Girls Rock and Roll School for Girls double CD. We'll talk about that album after this. You're out of here. You're gone. You're a broken record.
Absolutely gone.
She's done with you. Catholic Girls, that's the demo version of Broken Record, which appears on the brand new release coming out on Friday through JSP Records of England. And let's talk about this package. The second CD is stuff that was released officially on various albums, including most of the first album. The first CD, Rock Revelations, is unreleased demos and alternate takes. Now, are you sitting on a vault full of old tapes and early demos and things? Where did all these come from?
We had quite a bit of it. It was old cassette tapes and stuff that we had buried. I don't even know where it was buried. And we dug it up, and we had these two people who were involved. They're John Haley and Vinnie Mazzella. I can tell you the whole story about them, but okay. they were fans, supporters who had come to see us at a concert. Approximately 2015, we were opening up for Melanie from, you know who she is?
Oh, yeah, Melanie's been on the show. Yeah, brand new roller skates. I got a brand new key. Melanie?
Yes,
I love
that Melanie.
Yeah, all right, Melanie Safka.
We opened up for her acoustically. And the show was great. And after that, they came along and said hi. They had the album. I was stunned. And we started talking, and they wanted to do a project like this. It turned out that one of them, John Haley, does this professionally. He restores cassette tapes, any kind of tapes, anything but 8-track tapes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he will fix everything on it, and along with his assistant, Vinny Mazzella, who's also an actor, the two of them got together and decided to do this. And John had worked with JSP Records before, and JSP Records mostly did blues and jazz. They've been around since 1978, from what I understand. They've never done anything like along a pop, rock, new wave. This is their first venture out, so they got behind this project.
Was it because you had John advocating for you, or were they also closet fans of the Catholic Girls?
Well, it turned out John did advocate, but once they heard the material at JSP, they were very excited about it.
So how long of a process? If you've got all this stuff in boxes, probably not stored in temperature-controlled rooms, because who thinks of that when you're young and, you know, recording stuff? Oh, this is not a keeper. We'll throw it in the box. How long did it take for them to actually get these tapes, you know, in a quality form?
Approximately 2 years.
That's actually pretty quick.
And there were things that I had no idea that had to be done from cassette tapes. I was amazed to find this out. You know, you think the usual thing where, oh my God, a cassette tape breaks. That's the worst thing, you know?
Right.
And you can't patch it together or something like that. They can be tiny, tiny pitch changes just on one note. And all these little meticulous things that take a infinite amount of time and talent to be able to do that. So I was just really stunned by all that as well.
So when you listen to that first CD, the Rock Revelations unreleased demos and alternates, I mean, do you kind of like have to sit down and say, wow?
I did. I said, wow, because it brought back all these memories. I thought, wow, this is how it did sound. I remember it sounding that way back in, you know, 1981, 82. And I'm like, wow, they got it. They captured it perfectly.
Where did you have all these tapes? Were they in fact stored in like the basement or the attic or the garage?
Pretty much. Let's see, any place you can think of. Everything except underground, yes. They were in the garage, the basement, the spare room, somebody's parents' house, somebody's brother's house. I mean, we had to search high and low for this stuff, but we found it. And they had a lot of patience, I have to say.
And what's interesting, for those that are listening that aren't really in tune with the whole studio concept and process, most records, most recordings are done on multi-track, whether it's multi-track digital, multi-track tape. I'm assuming that most of the source material for that first album, like Broken Record that we just played, being off a cassette, you can't remix it. You just pretty much have to take what was recorded because you can't separate the tracks.
You can't remix it, but you can, let me put it this way, fine-tune it.
Okay.
And get it so it sounds as close as possible to the actual real thing.
Now, were you involved, the three of you, or were you specifically in actually picking which songs made the final cut? Because you obviously can only fit so many on a CD.
What it was a combination. Roxy and I sent them a lot of tapes, and we went back and forth on things because there were some that were just that we wanted, but honestly, they were just beyond repair.
Okay.
And that couldn't be done. And a good instance of that is Park Theater.
Okay.
Just done. Totally done. And because we had a very good demo of that. And so we had to weigh in all those the different things, both what could be fixed, what couldn't be fixed, and, you know, made to sound like the real thing. And we even were consulted, like, Gil, was this in this key? And I'm like, no, it wasn't. How did it get into another key just in one verse? It managed to do that.
Hmm. Now, this album is coming out Friday. It is available on your website. They can download it, I believe. Is that correct? You can download the MP3s?
What you can do is go via the website, and you can. It will take you to, at this point, it takes you to Amazon.
Okay.
But it's available in a lot of other outlets, and I believe in your stores, too.
Okay. The CatholicGirls.net is the website. You can find out all sorts of things about them. It looks like you guys maintain your own site, too. You're a very do-it-yourself kind of woman here.
We've been very do-it-yourself ever since the get-go, I have to say. Yes, we have. We have done a lot of things ourselves from way back when we used to handwrite our own little posters and put them up. And nowadays we're, I guess you would say, typing into Facebook and having fun with that.
Mm-hmm. You're very accessible to the fans, too. And as you call some of them super fans, the ones that help finance and keep you guys going, like on Exposed. I thought that was a really nice touch. The last track, you're giving shout outs to all the people. A lot of folks will put their name on the inside sleeve in like 8-point type that you can barely read. But you guys actually gave them that personal touch. And I thought that was classy.
We've been, always been very, very in love with our fans. And one of the things about the internet is it let us know just how many fans we actually had out there. We had no idea about the fans we had all over America and in other countries, in the UK, Australia, Japan, Canada, down South America. I was like stunned. Wow. I hadn't, you know, MCA, of course, did not tell us any of this. Mm-hmm. So we had no knowledge. So that was an enlightening period for us when we got the internet.
You actually got on MTV. You had radio hits off the first album. What happened with MCA? Why the album actually was respectable as far as it charted and it did okay. You'd think at that point there was still a thing called artist development, and you would think that they would have stayed with you.
You would think, but to be honest, what happened is MCA was having a takeover approximately in the middle of 1983, and that was Mr. Irving Azoff, who just happened to be the manager of Go-Go's. And he became the president. He fired almost all the staff there. That included all the A&R people we knew, all of the people that had done our cover, all the publicity people. He got rid of them first. Then he axed about 70% of the musical artists on that label. And for some reason, he didn't think that there could be two all-girl bands. He was hoping to get the Go-Go's on MCA, which he never accomplished. Mm-hmm. But he got us off at that point. And interestingly enough, a lot of those people who had worked with us never worked again in the industry.
Wow. That's a shame. There was a lot of that going on as labels merged and there were takeovers. And it was a real shame. It was the beginning of the end. 1989 kind of put the final nail in the coffin after, you know, after all those years and all the amazing artists. And the indie scene was a natural follow-up. I mean, the artists had to go indie or die. And you were able to take that over with your do-it-yourself attitude in many ways. You guys financed and somehow financed these different albums, and they were on like Cinema Records was Meet the Catholic Girls, and then you had all these other different indie labels that were coming around. How hard was it?
Just to give you an idea, we even DIY then, because MCA was falling apart, we financed our own video. We paid for that ourselves. We got it on MTV, and of course we did not have the power or the money to make it roll on MTV.
Right.
Otherwise, we could have been in high rotation, but of course, that didn't happen.
Right. But still, it was a novelty back then, in a way, to have an all-girl band. But was what was interesting is you guys actually could carry it. A lot of the female bands didn't in the earlier days of rock and roll, but you guys were able to carry it with you as performers. Some of the Go-Go's did, too. I got to give them credit, but not all.
We took it dead seriously, and we were all set to do a second album. So it was quite difficult then. But after we broke up in 1999, we came back together. I had moved to Los Angeles at that point, and then I moved back to New Jersey. Roxy and I got together at a barbecue. We started playing together, and we said, "Oh, what the heck? We're putting this band back together." And that was it. We didn't stop after that.
Now, you are the primary, actually, you are the only songwriter, as far as I know. Every song I see is credited to you. Where did the songwriting start? What got you into writing, and when did you start writing? At what age?
According to my father, I was singing when I was about 2 and making up some kind of songs, even back then. And I was writing my own little stuff. Of course, I didn't know how to record it at the time. So that's what I'm told. And then as I got to be sort of middle school, I guess you'd call it. I started writing poetry and putting it, and then trying to teach myself how to play guitar. Both Roxy and I are self-taught. We did not have the funds for that. And we just kind of figured it out as we went along.
Okay. You had some feedback, I should say fallback, from the Catholic Church when you first got started. When you look at it now and everything that's going on in music, you guys were quite innocent. And as you mentioned, you were actually wearing your actual schoolgirl outfits, basically. Why do you think you got such a slapping by the Archdiocese of Rhode Island? They wouldn't let you play there. And, of course, a lot of people thought that the fact you were wearing Catholic girl outfits outside of the school was some kind of derogatory slap at God or something. Where did that all come, and how did you deal with it?
Well, we were kind of surprised about it because, as it turned out, the Archdiocese of Rhode Island misinterpreted the lyrics of the song God Made You. The lyrics are, God made you for me, so how can she take you away? And what I meant at the time was, how can she, the other woman, or the other girl, take you away?
Mm-hmm.
I was not referring, and they interpreted that I was saying God was a woman.
Oh. And how do we know, so, how do we know God's not?
Right. So they actually banned us. We were like, what? We couldn't even believe that at the time. So, yes, we couldn't play Rhode Island on tour back then.
That's
wild. It kind of struck us funny. And it also, for some reason, SNL was supposed to have us on the show.
Uh-huh.
And if you can believe this, we were considered to be too controversial. And look at the people they had. Look at, they had Sinead O'Connor rip up the picture of the Pope or something after that.
Right.
I'm like, how could that be? We could be too controversial. I thought that was crazy at the time.
Wow. So do you guys, have you stayed with the look all these years?
Yeah, we've pretty much kept to that look. Yeah, I think it's just us. That's what we are. We were always just Catholic girls.
So what were your thoughts when Madonna stole your shtick and then Britney Spears comes along and does the same thing?
Well, that kind of stuff happens. You know, they're welcome to it, but we did have it first.
Let's play another song, Gail. What would you like to play?
Let's see. How about If No One Fell in Love?
If No One Fell in Love. Good cut. We're going to play the demo version. Again, this is a version that you haven't heard. So let's do it. This is the Catholic Girls. It's off the brand new 2-CD release, the Catholic Girls Rock and Roll School for Girls. It's available this Friday everywhere, and you can get you can link to it through thecatholicgirls.net, and it's on JSP Records out of England. Here you go.
Dead. It's like a big pickaxe in the back of your head. I have to admit, loves can be better. It's a long night in real hot weather than a
yeah.
If no one fell in love, well, we'd be in a crazy place, wouldn't we? Actually, we are in a crazy place. We need more love.
We need more love. Actually, I wrote that song, Tom. There was a friend of mine. It was a guy, and he was just talking to me, saying, you know, Gail, I don't think I believe in love. And I don't know whether he said that. It was just a friend. But he said, I don't know if it's because, and I don't know if he had just a lot of bad experiences or the way he saw life. And I started thinking about that and went, you know, let's see. If nobody fell in love, see, that would be pretty sad.
Yeah, definitely.
So I had to write the song about it.
Well, that song definitely has a different sound than the stuff we've already played. That was a song that kind of took me back to the 1960s girl groups and singers. It's got that melancholy, you know, the whole heartbrokenness to it. Were you going for a retro sound at that point, or was that?
It was just something that came natural. We wanted to have that, I guess, that background vocal thing that Roxy's doing.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted that little bit of feel, and I guess it was a little retro, but I was kind of talking to that guy saying, hey, if nobody fell in love, it would be kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, that'd be a great song for a movie soundtrack.
I agree.
Have you ever pursued that? A lot of your songs actually would lend themselves, because they are short, they are to the point, and they're very accommodating in so many story tells that's out there. They could fit in so many different storylines.
I think you're absolutely right. I would love to pursue it more. So get the word out, Tom. Help me out there.
All right.
I think we'll be okay.
Let's talk about the songwriting. You were talking about how that guy inspired you to write that song. Generally, you have written all the music of all the different albums. What is it that inspires you to write? What is it that that makes that light bulb go off and say, that's a song? There's a song in there somewhere.
Well, a lot of times it's not something that just happens to me. I kind of take in what's happening to people around me, as far as the actual thought of the song. And then the song, for some reason, the chorus pops into my head out of nowhere. Somehow it's like a gift. It just comes to me, and the words to that comes to me. And then I start writing the rest of the song around the chorus, basically the hook. And I tell the whole story then.
Okay. What is the expectation now that this album is done? 2+ years of fixing the tapes, you got the packaging done, and it is beautifully packaged, by the way. A double disc, it's got an outer sleeve, lots of great information in the jacket that you've got. You've got a 20-page insert book, lots of color photos, well-written story about the Catholic girls. Now that it's out, now that it's in your hand, in the age of COVID, how are you going to get this stuff out there? You're not able to tour.
Right now, you know, we're just playing it by ear. Eventually, things will change. And when they do, then we will play it by ear then. I'm sure we'll be ready to go when things do get better. Meanwhile, we're just going to keep on working on music and promoting this CD. And we're not going to stop, but we're not going to go out and, you know, there's no clubs right now to play or much of anything. So we'll wait it out. Things will eventually get better. It will take some time, but I believe it will get better eventually.
Now, this stuff is mostly older material, older unreleased demos, as we've discussed. Are you still writing? And what's the evolution brought? How has your sound changed in the last couple of years?
I think I'm still writing, yes. In some ways, it's changed, but some ways it hasn't. I still like a good tune. I like a memorable tune, and I like the lyrics that matter. That's very important to me. So even if it changes stylistically, I like to have that heart and soul there, no matter what.
Okay. I'm going to throw a curve at you, Gail. I know we were talking prior to the show through Facebook. We talked about certain songs we wanted to get to. I'm going to change one and add it to the list. And that's because I think the listeners need to hear The first single, Boys Can Cry. And now you had mentioned that's what the label picked. You wanted the Someone New. But what's interesting is that Goldmine Magazine, which I used to write for, and which actually came out, and they're doing a story on my record store in January.
Oh, nice.
Boys Can Cry was selected as part of the Ultimate Rock and Roll Jukebox, which meant of all the music released in the rock and roll era, they picked 200 songs that would be perfect fodder for the jukebox. And that song was on it. Looking back, maybe MCA knew what they were doing. Who knows?
I don't know. We pictured, this is how we pictured, Someone New first, and actually Boys Can Cry second. That was our pick.
Okay. Would have been a great double-sided hit.
Yeah, you got that right. That would have been perfect.
Well, we're going to play that now. This is actually off the first album, which is included on the Rock and Roll School for Girls. This is the single that got them on MTV and got the ball started, Boys Can Cry. Lots of crying going on in New Jersey. Of course, Leslie Gore, another legend of music from the same area there with It's My Party, I'll Cry If I Want To, Judy's Turn to Cry, and now Boys Can Cry. A lot of tear ducts going on in Jersey there.
Yeah, but this chance we made the boys cry.
That's right. Just to touch on Leslie real quick, were you a fan of hers? I did the liner notes for one of her albums years and years ago, and I was a big fan. So I can hear a little influence maybe in some of her stuff, and she was a very strong, independent woman.
I had heard certain things about her. You know, I had heard her music from my parents and stuff and that kind of thing, and I always thought she was great. But did I study her in depth? No. Okay. But in looking back, I see exactly what you mean.
Now, you've had a lot of folks champion you, Miami Steve, as we mentioned, Genya Raven. There's been a lot of different underground stations, Jersey and New York rockers that have gone on record saying how much the Catholic Girls meant to them, why they're important, the influence you guys had. Are you surprised that all these years later, you're still getting all these accolades and people who are from the hood, so to speak, are just now kind of turning on to you guys?
I'm very happy about it. In fact, Little Steven just played us Sunday night, as a matter of fact, on his Underground Garage show again.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was very happy about that. There's been a lot of people that have come out and support that us through all these years, and actually we really appreciate it.
And just remember,
they've been great.
Remember, folks, you can keep up with Gail and the girls at CatholicGirls.net. Visit there often. There's lots of stuff going on. Will this collection be available on vinyl? And the reason I ask is, as I mentioned, I have two vinyl record stores. Vinyl is so in again, and we're seeing so many anthology packages coming out for Record Store Day and things like that. You guys would seem prime choice for that.
Right now, this is not going to be available on vinyl, but you never know what could be in the future.
Okay. Are you a fan of vinyl?
Oh, I love vinyl. Okay. Love it. I've tried to hold on to certain things, but I can only keep so much.
I do want to touch on something that you brought out in the liner notes of, which you wrote, by the way, correct? You wrote all the liner notes for this.
It was a partially me, partially another person, Stuart, and it was partially the two guys, John Haley and Vinny Mazzella. We kind of did it as a collaboration with the liner notes. You know, we worked it out together.
It's very, very informative. And, of course, you got some great plugs in here from magazines that did reviews. And one of the things that comes out is the fact that I never realized until I really took a second look that on the album, for those that have the original first album from 82, that's the Munsters Mansion behind the school bus that you're in.
It is. We were told that we actually, they shot that photo on the Universal lot. And it was the other house that we were close by was Marcus Welby's house, of all things. And the tour bus came by. They were waving at us. We're like, okay, hi. It was kind of fun because we got to walk around on the set. That was excellent later.
Wow. And if I remember correctly, the guys that are on the bus were just extras on the set that were there for some kind of Spielberg thing. Was it E.T.?
It was E.T. They were the little bicycle riders that were on E.T., you know, when you saw them chasing E.T., I think it was.
Uh-huh.
And they happened to be around on set, so they pulled them into the school bus at the time and said, hey, we got some boys for you. We said, okay, sure, put them on.
I like the one kid. He's on the front and the back. He's oogling Roxy on the front, and you're giving him the look on the back cover. And he's just one of those little teenage boys. You can just read the bubble above his head.
Yes. So they were all very good. They were all actors, and they were a lot of fun on that bus. They were very helpful the whole time.
One thing I do want to touch on, because we're getting close here, and that is your unique style of singing. You can tell a Catholic Girls recording. You've got that trill in your voice it's unique, to say the least, and it's identifiable. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? Is that something that just you've always had?
I've always had it. My father, again, he pointed it out to me when I was about 2 or 3 and said, do that thing again you're doing with your voice. And I didn't even know what he was talking about. He said that thing. And that just came natural to me. I had to actually learn to control it a little bit so I didn't go totally wacky. But yes, that was totally natural.
Wow. It reminds me somewhere between Roy Orbison, Tiny Tim, and the guy from the Dead Kennedys. It's such a unique voice. I mean, it's just so unique. I love it. Don't ever lose that.
Okay, thank you. I will promise not to lose it.
Does Roxy ever get involved in fine-tuning the song, since you are the primary songwriter on everything, and she's been there since day one? Does she ever?
We work very closely, hand-in-hand, with the actual guitar parts. Like, we work our guitars totally out together. We make sure everything matches, the lines, the rhythm, we adjust that, and we work out the bass parts, and we work out the drum parts together.
Okay. Is there anything, Gail, that we haven't talked about you'd like to let people know, or any special shout-outs or any events coming up?
Well, right now there are no events coming up because we're kind of in a holding pattern.
Okay.
But we will be on Facebook all the time, and just keep paying attention. I'll give a special shout out to my pup, whose name is Shadow. He's a German Shepherd mix, and he's been very excited that I'm going to be on your radio show.
Excellent. Excellent.
And he stayed quiet the whole time.
Way to go, Shadow.
Yeah.
Are you doing any kind of virtual thing coming up at all? Have you guys talked about it, or are you guys so far apart? Are you all in Jersey? Is it possible to do a virtual thing?
We may eventually do something. Right now, I'm out west at the moment. I'm trying to see what I'm going to do, but we're going to plan on something down the line. You'll have to wait and be surprised.
All right. And any idea when the next Catholic Girls album of new material might come out? Is there a target date or a guesstimation?
Right now, there's no target gate. I'm just concentrating on this one. It just came out, and I'm going to enjoy it and have a lot of fun with it right now.
All right. We got time for one more song to wrap it up as we say goodbye. What did you want to play? We talked about Down at the Shore. We talked about Is It Safe Impossible?
Well, how about we stay on the boys theme and go with Some Boys?
Some Boys? Okay.
Yeah.
We will do that. This is our final song of the night. It's off the release, an official release. So let's get going on that. And Gail, is there any other place we can find you besides CatholicGirls.net and Facebook?
It's mostly that and Facebook.net. And by the way, I'm also still pursuing my writing career, but I'm writing a novel at the moment, too.
Oh, fiction?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
My first book was a vampire book, mm-hmm. And that came out back in 1993, and that was on Dell Publishing, and I'm working on something else now, too.
Is it more horror style, or is it more film noir? Because I saw the film noir link there on Exposed with the album cover.
It's a little bit of a mix of film noir, mystery, and I might have some female band in there. I'm not sure yet.
I wonder who that's modeled after.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Tom. It was great talking with you.
All right. This show, if you joined us late, will be aired again at 7 p.m. on Friday. This is Catholic Girls for all you boys, and some boys too.
Some dreams don't count. Sometimes you fall in love. Sometimes not. If I wish for something, I want a car to drive away. Oh, I saw the future.